won the senator's race for Washington. But William Holbrook lost the local election to take his state seat. I'm quite sure Hilly blames me for this, too. Not to mention all that work she'd put into setting me up with Stuart was for nothing. A few hours after talking to Mrs. Stein over the phone, I tiptoe back to check on Mother one last time. Daddy's already asleep beside her. Mother has a glass of milk on the table. She's propped up on her pillows, but her eyes are closed. She opens them as I'm peeking in.
Can I get you anything, Mama?
I'm only resting because Dr. Neal told me to. Where are you going, Eugenia? It's nearly 7 o'clock.
I'll be back in a little while. I'm just going for a drive.
I give her a kiss, hoping she doesn't ask any more questions. When I close the door, she's already fallen asleep. I drive fast through town. I dread telling Abilene about the new deadline. The old truck rattles and bangs in the potholes. It's in fast decline after another hard cotton season. My head practically hits the ceiling because someone's retied the seat springs too tight. I have to drive with the window down, my arm hanging out so the door won't rattle. The front window has a new smash-in at the shape of a sunset. I pull up to a light on State Street across from the paper company. When I look over, there's Elizabeth and May Mobley and Raleigh all crammed in the front seat of their white Corvair, headed home from supper somewhere, I guess. I freeze, not daring to look over again, afraid she'll see me and ask what I'm doing in the truck. I let them drive ahead, watching their taillights, fighting a hotness rising in my throat. It's been a long time since I've talked to Elizabeth. After the toilet incident, Elizabeth and I struggled to stay friends. We still talked on the phone occasionally, but she stopped saying more than a hello and a few empty sentences to me at league meetings because Hilly would see her. The last time I stopped by Elizabeth's house was a month ago.
I can't believe how big May Mobley's gotten, I'd said.
May Mobley had smiled shyly, hid behind her mother's leg. She was taller but still soft with baby fat.
Growing like a weed, Elizabeth said, looking out the window, and I thought, what an odd thing to compare your child to. A weed.
Elizabeth was still in her bathrobe, hair rollers in, already tiny again after the pregnancy. Her smile stayed tight. She kept looking at her watch, touching her curlers every few seconds. We stood around the kitchen.
Want to go to the club for lunch? I asked.
Abilene swung through the kitchen door then. In the dining room, I caught a glimpse of silver and Battenberg lace.
I can't, and I hate to rush you out, but Mama's meeting me at the jewel tailor shop.
She shot her eyes out the front window again.
You know how Mama hates to wait.
Her smile grew exponentially.
Oh, I'm sorry, don't let me keep you.
I patted her shoulder and headed for the door.
And then it hit me. How could I be so dumb? It's Wednesday, 12 o'clock. My old bridge club.
I backed the Cadillac down her drive, sorry that I'd embarrassed her so. When I turned, I saw her face stretched up to the window, watching me leave. And that's when I realized she wasn't embarrassed that she'd made me feel bad. Elizabeth Leifold was embarrassed to be seen with me. I park on Abilene Street, several houses down from hers, knowing we need to be even more cautious than ever. Even though Hilly would never come to this part of town, she is a threat to us all now, and I feel like her eyes are everywhere. I know the glee she would feel catching me doing this. I don't underestimate how far she would go to make sure I suffered the rest of my life. It's a crisp December night, and a fine rain is just starting to fall. Head down, I hurry along the street. My conversation this afternoon with Mrs. Stein is still racing through my head. I've been trying to prioritize everything left to do, but the hardest part is,
I have to ask Abilene again about what happened to Constantine. I cannot do a just job on Constantine's story if I don't know what's happened to her. It defeats the point of the book to put in only part of the story. It wouldn't be telling the truth. I hurry into Abilene's kitchen. The look on my face must tell her something's wrong.
What is it? Somebody see you?
No, I say, pulling papers from my satchel. I talked to Mrs. Stein this morning. I tell her everything I know about the deadline, about the pile.
All right. So,
Abilene is counting days in her head, the same way I have been all afternoon.
So, we got 2.5 weeks instead of 6 weeks. Oh, law. That ain't enough time. We still got to finish writing the Luvenia section and smooth out Faye Bell and the mini section. It ain't right yet. Miss Skeeter, we ain't even got a title yet.
I put my head in my hands. I feel like I'm slipping underwater. That's not all, I say. She wants me to write about Constantine. She asked me what happened to her. Abilene sets her cup of tea down. I can't write it if I don't know what happened, Abilene. So if you can't tell me, I was wondering if there's someone else who will. Abilene shakes her head.
I reckon there is, she says. But I don't want nobody else telling you that story.
Then, will you? Abilene takes off her black glasses, rubs her eyes. She puts them back on and I expect to see a tired face. She's worked all day, and she'll be working even harder now to try to make the deadline. I fidget in my chair, waiting for her answer. But she doesn't look tired at all. She's sitting up straight and gives me a defiant nod.
I'll write it down. Give me a few days. I'll tell you everything that happened to Constantine.
I work for 15 hours straight on Luvenia's interview. On Thursday night, I go to the league meeting. I'm dying to get out of the house, antsy from nerves, jittery about the deadline. The Christmas tree is starting to smell too rich. The spiced orange is sickly decadent. Mother is always cold. And my parents' house feels like I'm soaking in a vat of hot butter. I pause on the league steps, take in a deep breath of clean winter air. It's pathetic, but I'm glad to still have the newsletter. Once a week, I actually feel like I'm a part of things. And who knows, maybe this time will be different, with the holidays starting and all. But the minute I walk in, backs turn. My exclusion is tangible, as if concrete walls have formed around me. Hilly gives me a smirk, whips her head around to speak to someone else. I go deeper into the crowd and see Elizabeth. She smiles and I wave. I want to talk to her about Mother, tell her I'm getting worried. But before I get too close, Elizabeth turns, head down, and walks away. I go to my seat. This is new, from her, here. Instead of my usual seat up front, I slip in the back row, angry that Elizabeth wouldn't even say hello. Beside me is Rachel Cole Brandt. Rachel hardly ever comes to meetings, with 3 kids working on her master's in English from Millsaps College. I wish we were better friends, but I know she's too busy. On my other side is damn Leslie Fullerbean and her cloud of hairspray. She must risk her life every time she lights a cigarette. I wonder, if I push the top of her head, would aerosol spray out of her mouth? Almost every girl in the room has her legs crossed, a lit cigarette in her hand. The smoke gathers and curls around the ceiling. I haven't smoked in 2 months, and the smell makes me feel ill. Hilly steps up to the podium and announces the upcoming gimme drives. Coat drive, can drive, book drive and a plain old money drive. And then we get to Hilly's favorite part of the meeting, the trouble list. This is where she gets to call out the names of anyone late on their dues or tardy for meetings or not fulfilling their philanthropic duties. I'm always on the trouble list nowadays for something. Hilly's wearing a red wool A-line dress with a cape coat over it, Sherlock Holmes style, even though it's hot as fire in here. Every once in a while, she tosses back the front flap like it's in her way, but she looks like she enjoys this gesture too much for it really to be a problem. Her helper, Mary Nell, stands next to her, handing her notes. Mary Nell has the look of a blonde lapdog, the Pekingese kind with tiny feet and a nose that perks on the end. "Now, we have something very exciting to discuss." Hilly accepts the notes from the lapdog and scans over them. "The committee has decided that our newsletter could use a little updating." I sit up straighter. Shouldn't I decide on changes to the newsletter? "First of all, we're changing the newsletter from a weekly to a monthly. It's just too much with stamps going up to 6 cents and all. And we're adding a fashion column, highlighting some of the best outfits worn by our members, and a makeup column with all the latest trends. Oh, and the trouble list, of course. That'll be in there, too." She nods her head, making eye contact with a few members. "And finally, the most exciting change. We've decided to name this new correspondence The Tattler, after the European magazine all the ladies over there read." "Isn't that the cutest name?" says Mary Lou White, and Hilly's so proud of herself she doesn't even bang the gavel at her for speaking out of turn. "Okay, then, it is time to choose an editor for our new modern monthly. Any nominations?" Several hands pop up. I sit very still. "Jeannie Price, what say ye?"
"I say Hilly. I nominate Hilly Holbrook."
"Aren't you the sweetest thing? All right, any others?" Rachel Cole Brandt turns and looks at me like, "Are you believing this?" Evidently, she's the only one in the room who doesn't know about me and Hilly. "Any seconds to..." Hilly looks down at the podium, like she can't quite remember who's been nominated. "To Hilly Holbrook as editor?"
"I second."
"I third." Bang, bang goes the gavel, and I've lost my post as editor. Leslie Fullerbean is staring at me with eyes so wide, I can see there isn't anything back there where her brain should be. "Skeeter, isn't that your job?" Rachel says. "It was my job," I mutter, and head straight for the doors when the meeting is over. No one speaks to me. No one looks me in the eye. I keep my head high. In the foyer, Hilly and Elizabeth talk. Hilly tucks her dark hair behind her ears, gives me a diplomatic smile. She strides off to chat with someone else, but Elizabeth stays where she is. She touches my arm as I walk out. "Hey, Elizabeth," I murmur.
"I'm sorry, Skeeter,"
she whispers and our eyes hang together. But then she looks away. I walk down the steps and into the dark parking lot. I thought she had something more to say to me, but I guess I was wrong. I don't go straight home after the league meeting. I roll all the Cadillac windows down and let the night air blow on my face. It is warm and cold at the same time. I know I need to go home and work on the stories, but I turn onto the wide lanes of State Street and just drive. I've never felt so empty in my life. I can't help but think of all that's piling on top of me. I will never make this deadline. My friends despise me. Stuart is gone. Mother is... I don't know what mother is, but we all know it's more than just stomach ulcers. The Sun and Sand bar is closed, and I go by slow. Stare at how dead a neon sign seems when it's turned off. I coast past the tall Lamar Life Building, through the yellow blinking streetlights. It's only 8 o'clock at night, but everyone has gone to bed. Everyone's asleep in this town, in every way possible. I wish I could just leave here, I say, and my voice sounds eerie, with no one to hear it. In the dark, I get a glimpse of myself from way above, like in a movie. I've become one of those people who prowl around at night in their cars. God, I am the town's Boo Radley, just like in To Kill a Mockingbird. I flick on the radio, desperate for noise to fill my ears. It's My Party is playing, and I search for something else. I'm starting to hate the whiny teenage songs about love and nothing. In a moment of aligned wavelengths, I pick up Memphis WKPO, and out comes a man's voice, drunk sounding, singing fast and bluesy. At a dead-end street, I ease into the tote-some store parking lot and listen to the song. It is better than anything I've ever heard. You'll sink like a stone, for the times, they are a-changin'. A voice in a can tells me his name is Bob Dylan. But as the next song starts, the signal fades. I lean back in my seat, stare out at the dark windows of the store. I feel a rush of inexplicable relief. I feel like I've just heard something from the future. At the phone booth outside the store, I put in a dime and call Mother. I know she'll wait up for me until I get home.
Hello?
It's Daddy's voice at 8:15 at night.
Daddy?
Why are you up? What's wrong?
You need to come on home now, darling.
The streetlight suddenly feels too bright in my eyes. The night very cold. Is it Mama? Is she sick?
Stuart's been sitting on the porch for almost 2 hours now. He's waiting on you. Stuart?
It doesn't make sense. But Mama, she's...
Oh, Mama's fine. In fact, she's brightened up a little. Come on home, Skeeter, and tend to Stuart now.
The drive home has never felt so long. 10 minutes later, I pull in front of the house and see Stuart sitting on the top porch step. Daddy's in a rocking chair. They both stand when I turn off the car. Hey, Daddy, I say. I don't look at Stuart. Where's Mama?
She's asleep. I just checked on her.
Daddy yawns. I haven't seen him up past 7 o'clock in 10 years, when the spring cotton froze.
Night, you two. Turn the lights out when you're done.
Daddy goes inside and Stuart and I are left alone. The night is so black, so quiet, I can't see stars or a moon or even a dog in the yard. What are you doing here? I say, and my voice, it sounds small.
I came to talk to you.
I sit on the front step and put my head down on my arms. Just say it fast and then go on. I was getting better. I heard this song and I almost felt better 10 minutes ago. He moves closer to me, but not so close that we're touching. I wish we were touching.
I came to tell you something. I came to say that I saw her.
I lift my head up. The first word in my head is selfish. You selfish son of a bitch. Coming here to talk about Patricia.
I went out there, to San Francisco, 2 weeks ago. I got in my truck and drove for 4 days and knocked on the door of the apartment house her mama gave me the address to.
I cover my face. All I can see is Stuart pushing her hair back like he used to with me. I don't want to know this.
I told her I thought that was the ugliest thing you could do to a person. Lie that way. She looked so different. Had on this prairie-looking dress and a peace sign
and her hair was long, and she didn't have any lipstick on. And she laughed when she saw me. And then she called me a whore.
He rubs his eyes hard with his knuckles.
She, the one who took her clothes off for that guy, said I was a whore to my daddy, a whore to Mississippi.
Why are you telling me this? My fists are clenched. I taste metal. I've bitten down on my tongue.
I drove out there because of you. After we broke up, I knew I had to get her out of my head. And I did it, Skeeter. I drove 2,000 miles there and back, and I'm here to tell you it's dead. It's gone.
Well, good, Stuart, I say. Good for you. He moves closer and leans down so I will look at him, and I feel sick, literally nauseated by the smell of bourbon on his breath. And yet, I still want to fold myself up and put my entire body in his arms. I am loving him and hating him at the same time. Go home, I say, hardly believing myself. There's no place left inside me for you.
I don't believe that.
You're too late, Stuart.
Can I come by on Saturday to talk some more?
I shrug, my eyes full of tears. I won't let him throw me away again. It's already happened too many times. With him, with my friends. I'd be stupid to let it happen again. I don't really care what you do. I wake up at 5 a.m. and start working on the stories. With only 17 days until our deadline, I work through the day and night with a speed and efficiency I didn't know I possessed. I finish Luvenia's story in half the time it took me to write the others, and with an intense burning headache, I turn off the light as the first rays of sun peek through the window. If Abilene will give me Constantine's story by early next week, I just might be able to pull this off. And then I realize I do not have 17 more days. How dumb of me. I have 10 days because I haven't accounted for the time it will take to mail it to New York. I'd cry if only I had the time to do it. A few hours later, I wake up and go back to work. At 5 in the afternoon, I hear a car pull up and see Stuart climb out of his truck. I tear myself away from the typewriter and go out on the front porch. Hello, I say, standing in the doorway.
Hey, Skeeter.
He nods at me, shyly, I think, compared to his way 2 nights ago.
Afternoon, Mr. Phelan. Hey there, son.
Daddy gets up from his rocking chair.
I'll let you kids talk out here.
Don't get up, Daddy. I'm sorry, but I'm busy today, Stuart. You're welcome to sit out here with Daddy as long as you like. I go back in the house, past Mother at the kitchen table drinking warm milk.
Was that Stuart I saw out there?
I go in the dining room. I stand back from the windows, where I know Stuart can't see me. I watch until he drives away, and then I just keep watching. That night, as usual, I go to Abilene's. I tell her about the deadline of only 10 days, and she looks like she might cry. Then I hand her Luvenia's chapter to read, the one I've written at lightning speed. Minnie is at the kitchen table with us, drinking a Coke, looking out the window. I hadn't known she'd be here tonight, and wish she'd leave us to work. Abilene puts it down, nods.
I think this chapter is right good. Read just as well as the slow-wrote ones.
I sigh, leaning back in my chair, thinking of what else needs to be done. We need to decide on the title, I say and rub my temples. I've been working on a few. I think we should call it Colored Domestics and the Southern Families for Which They Work.
Say, what?
Minnie says, looking at me for the first time.
That's the best way to describe it, don't you think?
I say.
if you got a corn cob up your butt.
This isn't fiction, Minnie. It's sociology. It has to sound exact.
But that don't mean to have to sound boring, Minnie says.
Abilene, I sigh, hoping we can resolve this tonight. What do you think? Abilene shrugs, and I can see already she's putting on her peacemaking smile. It seems she has to smooth things over every time Minnie and I are in the same room.
That's a good title. Of course, you're gonna get tired of typing all that top of every page, she says.
I'd told her this is how it has to be done. Well, we could shorten it a little, I say, and pull out my pencil. Abilene scratches her nose, says,
What you think about just calling it help? Help?
Minnie repeats, like she's never heard of the word.
Help, I say.
Abilene shrugs, looks down shyly like she's a little embarrassed.
I ain't trying to take over your idea. I like to keep things simple, you know? I guess help sound all right to me, Minnie says and crosses her arms.
I like help, I say, because I really do. I think we'll still have to put the description underneath, so the category's clear, but I think that's a good title.
Good is right, Minnie says, 'cause if this thing gets printed, Lord knows we gonna need some.
On Sunday afternoon, with 8 days left, I come downstairs, dizzy and blinking from staring at pica type all day. I was almost glad when I heard Stuart's car pull up the drive. I rub my eyes. Maybe I'll sit with him a while, clear my head, then go back and work through the night. Stuart climbs out of his mud-splattered truck. He's still in his Sunday tie, and I try to ignore how handsome he looks. I stretch my arms. It's ridiculously warm out, considering Christmas is in 2.5 weeks. Mother's sitting on the porch in a rocking chair, swathed in blankets.
Hello, Mrs. Phelan. How are you feeling today?
Stuart asks. Mother gives him a regal nod.
Fair, thank you for asking.
I'm surprised by the coolness in her voice. She turns back to her newsletter, and I can't help but smile. Mother knows he's been stopping by, but she hasn't mentioned it but once. I have to wonder when it will come.
Hey,
he says to me quietly, and we sit on the bottom porch step. Silently, we watch our old cat Sherman sneak around a tree, his tail swaying, going after some creature we can't see. Stuart puts his hand on my shoulder.
I can't stay today. I'm heading to Dallas right now for an oil meeting, and I'll be gone 3 days,
he says.
I just came by to tell you.
All right. I shrug like it makes no difference.
All right, then,
he says and gets back in his truck. When he has disappeared, Mother clears her throat. I don't turn around and look at her in the rocking chair. I don't want her to see the disappointment in my face that he's gone. Go ahead, Mother, I finally mutter. Say what you want to say.
Don't you let him cheapen you.
I look back at her, eye her suspiciously, even though she is so frail under the wool blanket. Sorry is the fool who ever underestimates my mother.
If Stuart doesn't know how intelligent and kind I raised you to be, he can march straight on back to State Street.
She narrows her eyes out at the winter land.
Frankly, I don't care much for Stuart. He doesn't know how lucky he was to have you.
I let Mother's words sit like a tiny sweet candy on my tongue. Forcing myself up from the step, I head for the front door. There's so much work to be done and not nearly enough time. Thank you, Mother. I kiss her softly on the cheek and go inside. I'm exhausted and irritable. For 48 hours I've done nothing but type. I am stupid with facts about other people's lives. My eyes sting from the smell of typing ink. My fingers are striped with paper cuts. Who knew paper and ink could be so vicious? With just 6 days left, I go over to Abilene's. She's taken a weekday off from work, despite Elizabeth's annoyance. I can tell she knows what we need to discuss before I even say it. She leaves me in the kitchen and comes back with a letter in her hand.
Before I give this to you, I think I ought to tell you some things, so you can really understand.
I nod. I am tense in my chair. I want to tear the envelope open and get this over with. Abilene straightens her notebook that's sitting on the kitchen table. I watch as she aligns her two yellow pencils.
Remember, I told you Constantine had a daughter. Well, Lulabelle was her name. Law, she come out pale as snow. Grew hair the color of hay. Not curly like yours. Straight it was.
She was that white? I ask. I've wondered this ever since Abilene told me about Constantine's child, way back in Elizabeth's kitchen. I think about how surprised Constantine must have been to hold a white baby and know it was hers. She nods.
When Lulabelle was 4 years old, Constantine...
Abilene shifts in her chair.
She take her to a orphanage up in Chicago.
An orphanage? You mean she gave her baby away? As much as Constantine loved me, I can only imagine how much she must have loved her own child. Abilene looks me straight in the eye. I see something there I rarely see. Frustration. Antipathy.
A lot of colored women's got to give their children up, Miss Skeeter. Send their kids off 'cause they have to tend to a white family.
I look down, wondering if Constantine couldn't take care of her child because she had to take care of us.
But most send them off to family. A orphanage is different altogether.
Why didn't she send the baby to her sisters or another relative?
Her sister, she just couldn't handle it. Being Negro with white skin in Mississippi, it's like you don't belong to nobody. But it wasn't just hard on the girl. It was hard on Constantine. Folks would look at her. White folks would stop her. Ask her all suspicious, what she doing toting around a white child. Policemen used to stop on State Street, told her she need to get a uniform on. Even colored folks, they treat her different, distrustful, like she done something wrong. It was hard for her to find somebody to watch Lulabelle while she at work. Constantine got to where she didn't want to bring Lula out much.
Was she already working for my mother then?
She'd been with your mama a few years. That's where she met the father, Connor. He worked on your farm, lived back there in Hotstack.
Abilene shakes her head.
We was all surprised Constantine would go and get herself in the family way. Some folks at church wasn't so kind about it, especially when the baby come out white, even though the father was black as me.
I'm sure Mother wasn't too pleased either. Mother, I'm sure, knew all about it. She's always kept tabs on all the colored help and their situations, where they live, if they're married, how many children they have. It's more of a control thing than a real interest. She wants to know who's walking around her property. Was it a colored orphanage or a white one? Because I'm thinking, I'm hoping, Maybe Constantine just wanted a better life for her child. Maybe she thought she'd be adopted by a white family and not feel so different.
Colored? White ones wouldn't take her, I heard. I guess they knew. Maybe they seen that kind of thing before. When Constantine went to the train station with Lulabelle to take her up there, I heard white folks was staring on the platform, wanting to know why a little white girl was going in the colored car. And when Constantine left her at the place up in Chicago, four is pretty old to get given up, Lulabelle was screaming. That's what Constantine told somebody at our church. Said Lula was screaming and thrashing, trying to get her mama to come back to her. But Constantine, even with that sound in her ears, she left her there.
As I listen, it starts to hit me, what Abilene is telling me. If I hadn't had the mother I have, I might not have thought it. She gave her up because she was ashamed? Because her daughter was white? Abilene opens her mouth to disagree, but then she closes it, looks down.
A few years later, Constantine wrote the orphanage, told him she made a mistake. She wanted her girl back. But Lula had been adopted already. She was gone. Constantine always said giving a child away was the worst mistake she'd ever made in her life.
Abilene leans back in her chair,
and she said if she ever got Lulabelle back, she'd never let her go.
I sit quietly, my heart aching for Constantine. I'm starting to dread what this has to do with my mother.
About 2 years ago, Constantine get a letter from Lulabelle. I reckon she was 25 by then. And it said her adoptive parents give her the address. They start writing to each other, and Lulabelle says she want to come down and stay with her a while. Constantine, law, she's so nervous she couldn't walk straight. Too nervous to eat. Wouldn't even take no water. Kept throwing it up. I had her on my prayer list.
2 years ago. I was up at school then. Why didn't Constantine tell me in her letters what was going on?
She took all her savings and bought new clothes for Lulabelle. Hair things. Had the church bee sew her a new quilt for the bed Lula gonna sleep in. She told us at prayer meeting, what if she hate me? She's gonna ask me why I give her away, and if I tell her the truth, she'll hate me for what I done.
Abilene looks up from her cup of tea, smiles a little.
She tell us, I can't wait for Skeeter to meet her when she get back home from school. I forgot about that. I didn't know who Skeeter was back then.
I remember my last letter from Constantine, that she had a surprise for me. I realize now, she'd wanted to introduce me to her daughter. I swallow back tears coming up in my throat. What happened when Lulabelle came down to see her? Abilene slides the envelope across the table.
I reckon you ought to read that part at home.
At home, I go upstairs. Without even stopping to sit down, I open Abilene's letter. It is on notebook paper, covering the front and back, written in cursive pencil. Afterward, I stare at the 8 pages I've already written about walking to Hot Stack with Constantine, the puzzles we worked on together, her pressing her thumb in my hand. I take a deep breath and put my hands on the typewriter keys. I can't waste any more time. I have to finish her story. I write about what Abilene told me, that Constantine had a daughter and had to give her up so she could work for our family. The Millers, I call us, after Henry, my favorite band author. I don't put in that Constantine's daughter was high yellow. I just want to show that Constantine's love for me began with missing her own child. Perhaps that's what made it so unique, so deep. It didn't matter that I was white. While she was wanting her own daughter back, I was longing for Mother not to be disappointed in me. For 2 days, I write all the way through my childhood, my college years, where we sent letters to each other every week. But then I stop and listen to Mother coughing downstairs. I hear Daddy's footsteps going to her. I light a cigarette and stub it out, thinking, don't start up again. The toilet water rushes through the house, filled with a little more of my mother's body. I light another cigarette and smoke it down to my fingers. I can't write about what's in Abilene's letter. That afternoon, I call Abilene at home. I can't put it in the book, I tell her, about Mother and Constantine. I'll end it when I go to college. I just...
Miss Skeeter.
I know I should. I know I should be sacrificing as much as you and Minnie and all of you, but I can't do that to my mother.
No one expects you to, Miss Skeeter. Truth is, I wouldn't think real high of you if you did.
The next evening, I go to the kitchen for some tea.
Eugenia, are you downstairs?
I tread back to Mother's room. Daddy's not in bed yet. I hear the television on out in the relaxing room. I'm here, Mama. She's in bed at 6 in the evening, the white bowl by her side.
Have you been crying? You know how that ages your skin, dear.
I sit in the straight cane chair beside her bed. I think about how I should begin. Part of me understands why Mother acted the way she did, because really, wouldn't anyone be angry about what Lulabel did? But I need to hear my mother's side of the story. If there's anything redeeming about my mother that Abilene left out of the letter, I want to know. I want to talk about Constantine, I say.
Oh, Eugenia,
Mother chides and pats my hand.
That was almost 2 years ago.
Mama, I say, and make myself look into her eyes. Even though she is terribly thin and her collarbone is long and narrow beneath her skin, her eyes are still as sharp as ever.
What happened?
What happened with her daughter? Mother's jaw tightens, and I can tell she's surprised that I know about her. I wait for her to refuse to talk about it as before. She takes a deep breath, moves the white bowl a little closer to her, says,
Constantine sent her up to Chicago to live. She couldn't take care of her.
I nod and wait.
They are different that way, you know. Those people have children and don't think about the consequences until it's too late.
They. Those people. It reminds me of Hilly. Mother sees it on my face, too.
Now you look. I was good to Constantine. Oh, she talked back plenty of times, and I put up with it. But Skeeter... She didn't give me a choice this time.
I know, Mother. I know what happened.
Who told you? Who else knows about this?
I see the paranoia rising in Mother's eyes. It is her greatest fear coming true, and I feel sorry for her. I will never tell you who told me. All I can say is, it was no one... important to you, I say. I can't believe you would do that, Mother.
How dare you judge me after what she did? Do you really know what happened? Were you there?
I see the old anger, an obstinate woman who survived years of bleeding ulcers.
That girl.
She shakes her knobby finger at me.
She showed up here. I had the entire D.A.R. chapter at the house. You were up at school, and the doorbell was ringing nonstop, and Constantine was in the kitchen, making all that coffee over since the old percolator burned the first two pots right up.
Mother waves away the remembered reek of scorched coffee.
They were all in the living room having cake. 95 people in the house, and she's drinking coffee. She's talking to Sarah Vaughn's sister and walking around the house like a guest and sticking cake in her mouth. And then she's filling out the form to become a member.
Again, I nod. Maybe I didn't know those details, but they don't change what happened.
She looked white as anybody, and she knew it too. She knew exactly what she was doing, and so I say, "How do you do?" And she laughs and says, "Fine." So I say, "And what is your name?" And she says, "You mean you don't know? I'm Lulabel Bates. I'm grown now, and I've moved back in with Mama. I got here yesterday morning." And then she goes over to help herself to another piece of cake.
"Bates," I say, because this is another detail I didn't know, albeit insignificant. "She changed her last name back to Constantine's."
Thank God nobody heard her. But then she starts talking to Phoebe Miller, the president of the Southern States of the D.A.R., and I pulled her into the kitchen and I said, "Lulabelle, you can't stay here. You need to go on." And, oh, she looked at me haughty. She said, "What, you don't allow colored Negroes in your living room if we're not cleaning up?" That's when Constantine walks in the kitchen, and she looks as shocked as I am. I say, "Lulabelle, you get out of this house before I call Mr. Phelan." But she won't budge. Says, "When I thought she was white, I treated her fine and dandy. Says, up in Chicago, she's part of some black cat group." So I call Constantine. I say, "You get your daughter out of my house right now."
Mother's eyes seem more deep-set than ever. Her nostrils are flaring.
So Constantine, she tells Lulabelle to go on back to their house. And Lulabelle says, "Fine, I was leaving anyway," and heads for the dining room, and of course I stop her. "Oh, no," I say, "you go out the back door, not the front with the white guests. I was not about to have the D.A.R. find out about this." And I told that bawdy girl, whose own mama we gave $10 extra to every Christmas, she was not to step foot on this farm again. And do you know what she did?"
"Yes," I think, but I keep my face blank. I'm still searching for the redemption.
"Spit in my face. A Negro in my home trying to act white."
I shudder. Who would ever have the nerve to spit at my mother?
"I told Constantine that girl better not show her face here again. Not to Hotstack, not to the state of Mississippi. Nor would I tolerate her keeping terms with Lulabelle, not as long as your daddy was paying Constantine's rent on that house back there."
"But it was Lulabelle acting that way, not Constantine."
"What if she stayed? I couldn't have that girl going around Jackson, acting white when she was colored, telling everybody she got into a D.A.R. party at Longleaf. Oh, I just thank God nobody ever found out about it. She tried to embarrass me in my own home, Eugenia. 5 minutes before, she had Phoebe Miller filling out the form for her to join."
"She hadn't seen her daughter in 20 years. You can't tell a person they can't see their child." But Mother is caught up in her own story.
And Constantine, she thought she could get me to change my mind. Oh, Miss Phelan, please just let her stay at the house. She won't come on this side again. I hadn't seen her in so long. And that Lula Belle, with her hand on her hip, saying, "Yeah, my daddy died, and my mama was too sick to take care of me when I was a baby. She had to give me away. You can't keep us apart."
Mother lowers her voice. She seems matter-of-fact now.
I looked at Constantine, and I felt so much shame for her. To get pregnant in the first place, and then to lie.
I feel sick and hot. I'm ready for this to be over. Mother narrows her eyes.
It's time you learned, Eugenia, how things really are. You idolize Constantine too much. You always have.
She points her finger at me.
They are not like regular people.
I can't look at her. I close my eyes. And then what happened, Mother?
I asked Constantine just as plain as day. Is that what you told her? Is that how you cover your mistakes?
This is the part I was hoping wasn't true. This is what I'd hoped Abilene had been wrong about.
I told Lula Belle the truth. I told her, your daddy didn't die. He left the day after you were born. And your mama hadn't been sick a day in her life. She gave you up because you were too high yellow. She didn't want you.
Why couldn't you let her believe what Constantine told her? Constantine was so scared she wouldn't like her. That's why she told her those things.
Because Lula Belle needed to know the truth. She needed to go back to Chicago, where she belonged.
I let my head sink into my hands. There is no redeeming piece of the story. I know why Abilene hadn't wanted to tell me. A child should never know this about her own mother.
I never thought Constantine would go to Illinois with her, Eugenia. Honestly, I was sorry to see her go.
You weren't, I say. I think about Constantine. After living 50 years in the country, sitting in a tiny apartment in Chicago, how lonely she must have felt. How bad her knees must have felt in that cold.
I was. And even though I told her not to write you, she probably would have, if there had been more time.
More time?
Constantine died, Skeeter. I sent her a check for her birthday to the address I found for her daughter. But Lula Belle sent it back with a copy of the obituary.
Constantine, I cry. I wish I'd known. Why didn't you tell me, Mama? Mother sniffs, keeping her eyes straight ahead. She quickly wipes her eyes.
Because I knew you'd blame me when it wasn't my fault.
When did she die? How long was she living in Chicago? I ask. Mother pulls the basin closer, hugs it to her side.
3 weeks.
Abilene opens her back door, lets me in. Minnie is sitting at the table, stirring her coffee. When she sees me, she tugs the sleeve of her dress down, but I see the edge of a white bandage on her arm. She grumbles a hello, then goes back to her cup. I put the manuscript down on the table with a thump. If I mail it in the morning, that still leaves 6 days for it to get there. We might just make it. I smile through my exhaustion.
Law, that is something. Look at all of them pages.
Abilene grins and sits on her stool.
266 of them.
Now we just wait and see, I say, and we all three stare at the stack.
Finally, Minnie says, and I can see the hint of something. Not exactly a smile, but more like satisfaction.
The room grows quiet. It's dark outside the window. The post office is already closed, so I brought it over to show Abilene and Minnie one last time before I mail it. Usually, I only bring over sections at a time.
What if they find out?
Abilene says quietly. Minnie looks up from her coffee.
What if folks find out Niceville is Jackson, or figure out who?
They ain't gonna know, Minnie says. Jackson ain't no special place. There's 10,000 towns just like it.
We haven't talked about this in a while, and besides Winnie's comment about tongues, we haven't really discussed the actual consequences besides the maids losing their jobs. For the past 8 months, all we've thought about is just getting it written.
Minnie, you got your kids to think about,
Abilene says.
And Leroy, if he find out.
The sureness in Minnie's eyes changes to something darting, paranoid.
Leroy gonna be mad, sure enough.
She tugs at her sleeve again.
Mad, then sad, if the white people catch hold of me.
You think maybe we ought to find a place we could go, in case it get bad?
Abilene asks. They both think about this, then shake their heads.
I don't know where we'd go,
Minnie says.
You might think about that, Miss Skeeter, somewhere for yourself,
Abilene says. I can't leave Mother, I say. I've been standing and I sink down into a chair. Abilene, do you really think they'd hurt us? I mean, like, what's in the papers? Abilene cocks her head at me, confused. She wrinkles her forehead like we've had a misunderstanding.
They'd beat us. They'd come out here with baseball bats. Maybe they won't kill us, but...
But who exactly would do this? The white women we've written about? They wouldn't hurt us. Would they? I ask.
Don't you know white men's like nothing better than protecting the white women's of their town?
My skin prickles. I'm not so afraid for myself, but for what I've done to Abilene, to Minnie, to Luvinia and Faybelle and 8 other women. The book is sitting there on the table. I want to put it in my satchel and hide it. Instead, I look to Minnie because, for some reason, I think she's the only one among us who really understands what could happen. She doesn't look back at me, though. She is lost in thought. She's running her thumbnail back and forth across her lip. Minnie, what do you think? I ask. Minnie keeps her eyes on the window, nods at her own thoughts.
I think what we need is some insurance. Ain't no such thing, Abilene says. Not for us. What if we put the terrible awful in the book?
Minnie asks.
We can't, Minnie, Abilene says. It'll give us away. But if we put it in there, then Miss Hilly can't let anybody find out the book is about Jackson. She don't want anybody to know that story's about her. And if they start getting close to figuring it out, she gonna steal them the other way. Law, Minnie, that is too risky. Nobody can predict what that woman gonna do. Nobody know that story but Miss Hilly and her own mama,
Minnie says.
And Miss Celia, but she ain't got no friends to tell anyway.
What happened? I ask. Is it really that terrible? Abilene looks at me. My eyebrows go up.
Who's she gonna admit that to? Minnie asks Abilene. She ain't gonna want you and Miss Lee folk to get identified either, Abilene. 'Cause then people gonna be just one step away. I'm telling